97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. My name is Tony Colombo. Thank you so much for joining us today. Joining me in studio is, of course, our producer, Chad Ellis. And
hello.
My partner, Bo Matthews. Great to see you, my friend. How's it going?
Been a great week. This weather is phenomenal.
It changed. We went from... horrible. It's warmer now. It's actually decent.
Well, it's cooler than it was this past week.
Right.
I will tell you, on Wednesday.
Are you saying the snow is the wonderful thing? Like the freezing?
I'm from Minnesota. That's nothing. That ain't even
called
snow. I
agree. It wasn't nothing, but I do prefer 50s than 20s.
So on Tuesday, I get a phone call from the guy that I had in here from Stream Adventures, Brian Wertle. When you were on vacation, I had him come in, right?
That's right.
And he calls me Tuesday and says, hey, you want to go fishing tomorrow?
Oh.
I had to go on the conservation department website to get a one-day fishing pass, which, of course, he busted me on. He goes, pay the $5 extra. You can fish anytime between now and next. I'm like, what? So we go out.
Actually, right now is not a great time to buy because it would expire in February. So you did the right thing.
No. This guy fishes like every week.
Right.
Throughout the year.
Are you going to go every week?
No, I'm not.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, no.
He's going to get forced out.
If you buy it now, it expires in February, so it's not worth it.
Right. No, it was
$7. In February, buy it and get the whole year.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We go out on the big river, secret honey hole he found,
nice.
And we went out bass fishing, and we had a blast. I have actually put together a video on my Facebook page, Bo Matthews. You can search that. Great video. We had a great time. 4 hours.
I'm so jealous. It's been over a month since I've fished, and that's, for me, that's an eternity.
And we didn't get skunked either.
Good for you.
It wasn't really busy, but I'm telling you, Tony, I don't know how to connect.
Where were you? On the river?
The big river.
The Mississippi.
No.
No, the big river.
The big river.
Yes,
it's called the big river.
I have, yep.
Jeff County.
Yep.
But
been there.
I've never caught and released. I've never catch and release fished.
You eat everything you catch?
Absolutely.
What a man. You are a man.
I grew up in Minnesota. I mean, unless it's nasty or, you know, one-eyed or something.
I'd be 600 pounds if I ate everything I caught.
When he told me it was catch and releases, you should have seen his face. He was so sad.
So my dad was here a year ago, and I said, I'm going to have this guy take you out fishing. When I told him the other night that it was catch and release, he goes, I'm not doing it. I'm not going. You ain't taking this fish and throwing it back in the water.
That's hilarious.
Because I'm like, why are we out here then? I mean, really, why are you out there?
For the fun of it. For the sport of it.
I don't know.
90% of the time that I fish is catch and release.
Oh,
we bass fish. I mean, we take pictures, we weigh them, that kind of stuff.
I'm sorry, I'm a purist.
But we do, you know, every year try to do a fish fry where we catch all the fish and we eat them. Or if we catch a big catfish or something, we'll keep it. But I am primarily a bass fisherman. It's very much for the sport of it.
I tried it. I enjoyed it, but I couldn't believe.
What were you targeting?
Bass, smallmouth bass.
Good for you, yeah.
Well, largemouth too, but we only caught small.
Smallmouth bass are the best pound for pound fighters.
Great stuff.
And they're
absolutely
river fishing for smallmouth bass is tough to beat.
And like I said, I grew up in Minnesota where we fished. You know, I fished as a kid a lot. Mm-hmm. My aim, and I impressed Brian with my aim of my casting.
Mm-hmm.
It was the setting the hook thing that I was not doing well on. Mm-hmm. But you know, it was like fishing with my dad.
Were you in a Were you in a bass boat?
Jet boat. Little jet boat.
It was
4 hours. He asked me, he goes, so how are your sea legs? I said, I'm okay. I didn't realize we were going to be out there 4 hours. My core is so tight right now. It's just.
You look great.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I appreciate that. Because it ain't fat and full with fish in my belly.
That is great.
I went and got a fish sandwich, by the way. On the way home, I got a fish sandwich.
Just to make up for it. To make up for throwing them all back. That's great. So, yeah, we appreciate you joining us for another edition of Second Amendment Radio and The Great Outdoors. Got a great show on tap for you today. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to be talking to our friend Tim Shelsbeck from Drury Outdoors. He is the co-host of their podcast. And now that rifle season is in full swing, we've got a lot of hunting to talk about with Tim. Right now, though, we want to go to our good friend Aaron Tarlow, the owner of Southern Armory, who joins us from a cave deep in the woods somewhere in America where he is fighting for your freedoms and truth and justice. Great to talk to you, Aaron. How are you doing?
I'm good, Tony. How are you?
I am great. Great to talk to you, my friend. I want to, everybody knows Aaron is the owner of Southern Armory. I want to talk about Southern Armory and get into what's happening there here in a few minutes. But I want to get into some of these stories to start the conversation and get your reaction to some of the news happening this week. When I saw this story, Aaron, you're the first person I thought of, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it. We on this show, Aaron's been with the show since day one, and unfortunately, what, 90% of the news stories we've done on this show, Aaron, have been negative and have been about people trying to take away your gun rights, right? I mean, it's always negative news. This is a little bit of positive news and something that is starting to catch on. And I want to, again, I want to hear what you have to say about this. A Florida county this week was the latest to declare itself a Second Amendment sanctuary. We're so used to talking about sanctuary cities, which are all these cities and counties popping up around the country that are that say that they won't enforce immigration laws, and you know we have judges helping to hide immigrants from illegal immigrants from ICE agents, and so sanctuary cities has become something we're very familiar with. But these now, what is happening as a rebuttal? Is these Second Amendment sanctuaries. In a unanimous decision, the Lake County Board of Commissioners, again, this is in Central Florida, passed a resolution declaring itself a Second Amendment sanctuary. The Central Florida County is the latest municipality in the United States to pass a measure vowing to protect residents from attempts at gun control. Cities and counties in Illinois, Colorado, and California, some of the most gun-grab states there are, have done this as well, I think, to protect themselves. They've also, counties in these states, Illinois, Colorado, and California, have also proclaimed themselves sanctuaries, saying they won't enforce laws that infringe on residents' rights to bear arms. What's your reaction to that? Are you a supporter of these cities and counties passing laws and becoming Second Amendment sanctuaries and saying we're not going to enforce laws that take people's guns?
Absolutely. Yeah. They're upholding their sworn pledge to uphold the Constitution and protect your Second Amendment right. So there's not an asterisk on the back of that Second Amendment that I saw. And, I mean, I've got a copy of the Bill of Rights I carry with me. You've seen that. It's mm-hmm. in my wallet. Mm-hmm. And I've actually got one that's like a photocopy on parchment paper, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I got that at Constitution Hall when I was in Philadelphia. So with all that being said, some states like Kansas have gone on to say, you know, basically the federal gun control doesn't count here in our state. And there's been people that have challenged that by building their own NFA weapons, or NFA items, I should say, like suppressors and short barrel rifles and whatnot. And then those individuals, the feds try to come in and enforce it. And a lot of those cases are still kind of up in the air, because the way that the law was written, they didn't cross state lines. They were manufactured with the only things in that state and therefore not subject to it. So it's great to see these individual cities taking initiative on doing this, but you know, we need to get the states involved too. When you get enough states that do it, eventually the federal government is going to have quite a situation on their hands where they're going to have to make some decisions.
Yes. You know, living in Missouri, we know we have a very liberal, a very open gun rights.
Yeah. Yeah, we're lucky.
Concealed carry. We mm-hmm. are lucky. But how are they doing this? You listed off Illinois in that story. How is Illinois doing this?
Illinois, Colorado, and California.
Yeah, but so Illinois has such tough gun laws.
Well, I think, but it, just like Illinois and California, just like in Illinois that we've seen here, and I'm sure it's the same way in Colorado and California, there are still pockets of those states that are very red and don't like what's going on around them, but they don't have enough population to, influence statewide votes.
Okay.
But, I mean, Aaron, right? There's plenty of very conservative pockets in even some of the most liberal states. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, you look at Illinois, and, you know, I'm preaching to the choir here. You know, Illinois is primarily controlled by Springfield and the Chicago areas, which are very, very blue. But then you look at the rest of the state, and they're all conservatives.
Right, right.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's one of the reasons that the petition to separate Illinois into Northern Illinois, has really caught on. And I meet people from Illinois, and I say, hey, man, make sure you go sign this petition, because, you know, if you guys could make a Southern Illinois and make a 51st state, man, that'd be just great, you know, and they could have their own, you know, and they're seeing their tax dollars go out. And this is beyond the Second Amendment when we talk about Illinois. This is a whole other bag of worms that I've been following. But a lot of people I know in Illinois are tired of having their gun rights trampled on. They're tired of being taxed to death. So I get it. And there's only, I saw a recent article, there's only a few counties left that they got to get the number of signatures in that county to start separating the state. Mm-hmm. So hopefully they're successful. But, you know, trying to counteract some of the gun laws is a great thing, too.
Yeah. So, Aaron, to your point that you said that at some point the federal government's going to have to step in and do something because we can't just allow this mess to continue. I am not in favor of any area, city, county, whatever, just passing laws that say we don't have to follow the law. So I've never liked that with sanctuary cities, and I'm not necessarily in support of this idea of Second Amendment sanctuaries, but I do like that that people are fighting back, and I hope that it does, like you said, force the federal government to do something and say, look, we can't just have this craziness where every freaking township you pass into as you're traveling around the country, that we have different local lawmakers, passing laws that say we don't have to follow certain laws. We need to get it. It needs to all be uniform. Well, not uniform. I mean, not, you know, states' rights is something I'm a big supporter of. But yeah, I just don't like I don't like the idea, just like I didn't like it with sanctuary cities. I don't like the idea of judges saying, well, here's a law that I do have to follow and here's laws that I don't have to follow. We need that. In my opinion, we got to knock that off.
Right. I agree with you.
And this, I think, might force everybody's hand, because they're like, oh, hey, we got one over on them with the sanctuary cities. And now people are saying, oh, well, then we'll do our own thing. And people are reacting like, that's not fair. You can't do that. Well, you just did.
So it's a huge, you know, question, especially when it comes to the 10th Amendment and states' rights. But the problem with sanctuary cities, the problem with your Second Amendment, your gun control, is those are immigration, securing the borders, things like that, and firearms. Those are all outlined in your Bill of Rights. So now you're getting into really a constitutional question about what is specifically delegated to the federal government, what is specifically delegated to the states, and, you know, the counties and the cities, et cetera, on down the line. But that's a, you know, it's a great, the great topic for discussion. I think that when we go, we're going to have a Second Amendment sanctuary city, nobody's going to move, right? I mean, you're just not going to sell your house and move into one of these towns because you're, you know, in the same state, right? Mm-hmm. Just because they declared this. I think it's just a more of a political rattling, so to speak, of, well, if you can do this and we can do this. And, you know, and I think it's just, it kind of maybe just points out the absurdity on some of this stuff. But yeah, the federal government's going to have their hands full, especially the ATF.
Yeah.
When all these states start saying, no, if you want to possess machine gun suppressors and short barrel rifles, all other weapons.
Just wait until one of these Second Amendment sanctuaries is bordering a sanctuary city. And you've got people like, just walking across the street and like, well, hey, over here, you can't touch anything about my guns. You can't even pass a law to take them away. Over here, you can pretty much do anything you want and laws don't matter. I mean, it's going to create a mess that somebody's going to have to address. Aaron, before we let you go, a little more than a minute to go, Black Friday's right around the corner. Busy time at Southern Armory. What is happening at Southern Armory?
So Black Friday is our best sales of the year. We have other, you know, themed sales, but this one you get a free class, whether it's a defensive pistol class, which is just the next thing after you do your CCW, or a CCW class for free. We've also given out free time on the simulator as well. So that's a great way for you to get some added bonuses up to $150 on top of your firearms purchase. It does not have to be an in-stock firearm. So we'll have, you know, a lot of firearms in stock and duplicates of. But if you come in and you want something that we just don't have, or maybe we sold out of, we're happy to order it for you. We're happy to still get you that promotional item. Mm-hmm. And then on Cyber Monday, we do our classes at a discount. You can get on southernarmory.com and roll down that on Cyber Monday, because we're closed on Mondays, and get some classes. We've had plenty of people take advantage of that. We've got classes through December, and I believe Jessica was working on them for first quarter already.
Very good.
Have lots of options for dates. So if you want to find us.
Yeah, Southern Armory on Facebook, of course, don't forget that. And yeah, where are you guys located? Get ready, Chad.
So 9901 Watson Road, 1 mile east of 270 and 44, and southernarmory.com.
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 That's southernarmory.com.
Chad insists on going last, Aaron. He makes Bo...
He makes Bo go
before him because he has to be the closer.
We're having a meeting.
It's very important to him to be the closer on the southernarmory.com. I think that's hilarious.
Yeah. And then you can get on our Facebook, Southern Armory's Facebook page.
Yes.
And you can catch all the used guns we have coming in. And that's the best way to see a used gun. And if you want it, you know, jump on it. You send us a message. You're probably better off calling because we're busy in store. We're not always answering messages super quick, but you call, hey, is that gun still there? What's the price? Because we never post the price on Facebook because we don't like getting bans. It's almost been a year since my last ban.
Have a good Thanksgiving.
We need to
Aaron.
Tell that story again very soon.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal.
Yeah.
And then
one of
my favorites. Second Amendment Radio on there too. I do some live streams and talk about some more stories.
Yeah.
So
good
get
stuff.
On and join us. Keep the conversation going. Check your rights.
You bet. That's right. Aaron Tarlow, the owner of Southern Armory, thank you so much. Have a great Thanksgiving. We will be here next week doing another live show on Thanksgiving weekend. Hopefully, Aaron, we can talk to you then. If not, I'm sure we'll talk to you again real, real soon. Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, we'll talk to you then. Bye.
You sounds good. Yep. All right. We got to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to talk to Tim Shelsvik from Drury Outdoors. Hunting season, rifle season is in full swing. Talk to Tim about it next. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Welcome back to Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Big thank you to Aaron Tarlow, the owner of Southern Armory, for joining us in that last segment. Tony Colombo here, producer Chad Ellis there, and my partner Bo Matthews right there. Thank you so much for listening to the show this weekend. If you missed anything in that first segment with Aaron, Aaron is always a wealth of knowledge, starts the show with us almost every week. And just a reminder, if you ever miss anything or you want to hear it again, you can do so on the radio.com app. You can download the podcast of the show in many places, pretty much anywhere you download podcasts. But the best place to do so is the radio.com app, because it's basically one-stop shopping for everything here at the radio station. You can stream the station 24/7. You can download this show and all the podcasts from all the shows on the radio station. And you can also rewind. We have a brand new radio rewind feature on the radio.com app, which allows you to be listening to live radio, just like if you're watching live television on your DVR. And, you know, you're listening to us talk to Aaron Tarlow, and he says something interesting, and you're like, let me hear that again. You can just rewind live radio right there as far back as 24 hours.
Or you think, did Tony just say that?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So go and check that out on the radio.com app. And as I mentioned in the last segment, joining us now is our friend Tim Shelsvik, the Thinking Woodsman, the Thinking Woodsman podcast. He also is with Drury Outdoors and their 100% Wild podcast. And always great, especially now that we are in full swing rifle season here in the state of Missouri. Always great to talk to Tim about everything that is happening with hunting. Great to talk to you, Tim. How's it going?
What's up, boys?
Hey, how are you doing, my friend? I bet you have spent some time recently in a deer stand.
You would win that bet. I did. And like a fair number of Missourians, I was actually hunting during rifle season with my archery equipment. That's legal to do. You just need to purchase a firearms tag, and you can continue hunting with your bow. If you just are a diehard bow hunter and just can't put it down, that's what I was doing. And guess what I killed?
A deer.
Nothing.
Oh, no.
Well, I killed a bunch of time. I killed Friday and Saturday and part of Sunday. Nothing to show for it.
Did you see anything?
I did, yeah. You know, it's a part of the season. You know, it's the rut. So the bucks are looking for does that are ready to be bred. And so you tend to see more bucks up and on their feet than you do any other time of year. That's kind of why they have rifle season planted here in Missouri and in Illinois where they do, because it gives people the best opportunity at seeing a good deer. But then we're starting to move into the period of time where the mature bucks are finding their hot does and they're locking down and bedding down with them and spending a lot of time tending that particular doe. So they're not moving a whole lot. They'll get up out of their bedroom and maybe walk 60 yards and get something to eat, and then they go right back. They just don't leave the does very much during this phase. And so it can get a little challenging. And movement can be a little bit different. A lot of times you hear people getting down out of their stands midday to go back for lunch, and on their way back in, they bump the big boy, and they're kicking themselves for having gotten down. Well, this is the time of year where really those midday sits are your best bet at intercepting a big mature buck. But I intercepted just some small bucks and some does last weekend, and I had a squirrel come and sniff my foot and then run away.
Got that
so
close.
Why for you... why do you stick with the archery setup even in rifle season? Is it just personal preference, more fun for you?
It is, yeah. I'm just crazy about bow hunting, and I turkey hunt with a gun sometimes. I shoot squirrels with my 17 HMR, so I've got nothing against firearm hunting. Just when it comes to taking whitetails, I really prefer bow hunting them.
Very cool. I wanted to make some people aware of this and get Tim and everybody's reaction to it. I didn't realize that this is kind of a milestone year in the state of Missouri. This year, Missouri is celebrating 75 years of modern deer hunting. There was a period of time before that that the white-tailed deer population in the state of Missouri was decimated. The state once had less than 500 deer in the entire state. In 1937, Missouri approved the Conservation Commission, which immediately began to work to restore the deer numbers. And in 1944, 75 years ago, the state had its first modern deer season. Listen to this, Bo. That year, 1944, the first year that they allowed people to hunt, it was a 2-day buck only season limited to 20 counties. That it was just a 2-day season in 1944. That year, 7,757 hunters went into the woods and harvested 519 bucks. Today, 500,000 hunters harvest 250,000 deer all over the state. So now it's 250,000 in 1944. It was a 2-day season, and only 519 bucks were killed that year. When I read that story, Tim, I think that's super impressive. Is that as impressive as it sounds? And is that an issue that was sort of unique to Missouri, or did there used to be a big problem in the entire country with this?
Yeah, you talk to, I've got a buddy, Ed Hinch. He is, he's in his 80s. He lived through that time when seeing a deer was like seeing a unicorn. They were so rare. And the same thing goes, I mean, turkey, the wild turkey here in Missouri specifically followed kind of the same trajectory. There were very few around, but what changed was actually creating seasons and helping people understand the value these animals have, and hunting dollars are what fund those restoration efforts. So some of the deer that we now see in different parts of the Midwest were restocked from wild populations down deep in the Ozarks. Same thing with wild turkeys.
And that is the
wild
same
turkeys
argument.
Were taken from there.
That is the same argument that people have. Is like, why do you have to go hunt those deer? This just proves that the conservation department has done this strategically.
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely.
It's impressive.
And so we're living in the golden age of whitetail hunting and turkey hunting right now. Well, turkeys, their populations peaked back in probably the early 2000s. I mean, there were tons and tons of turkeys in Missouri. They've kind of leveled out more to a sustainable level now, which is normal. We in many places in Missouri, there are way too many whitetails for the carrying capacity of the land. And so so limits are very generous. In some places, a lot of places, you can buy unlimited doe tags because there are just way too many. We know from car collisions and illness that that there's just too many whitetails around. So hunting is the primary tool that conservation biologists use to control numbers. We're seeing kind of the same thing happen with elk. Imagine if there were no appetite for elk hunting in Missouri. Does anyone really think that we would see the elk restoration efforts that the Department of Conservation picked up 5 or 7 years ago? And like, we now have a viable, sustaining wild elk herd here in Missouri. They number somewhere around 200 or so. And the Conservation Department is talking about having our first elk season in modern history.
Wow.
Maybe next year, possibly the following year, just depending on numbers.
Wow,
so, and same thing with bear. Hunting drives the dollars from hunting really drive these restoration efforts because hunters value these animals.
Yeah, you know, I actually have a story that I want to get to in a little bit about the rising number of bear in the state of Missouri, which is
absolutely
something that I think many people would be surprised by. But we're talking to Tim Shelsvik from Drury Outdoors, talking hunting. You touched on something that probably to this audience is preaching to the choir, but it's more common, I think, than people realize. And tell me how much you've come across this in your life, Tim, that people that are closed-minded to the entire idea of hunting and fishing and, you know, shooting an animal, that it's, you know, that it's just this terrible thing, they're shocked to find that it's the hunters and the fishermen and the people that are out there, you know, killing these animals in quotes, that are the ones that are making sure that these animals are actually thriving and healthy and the population does stay up. And it's the fishermen that keep the waters clean and the camp and the outdoorsmen who keeps the campgrounds clean. There's way more done by the people inside this industry that are these, you know, looked at some as these heartless, you know, killers with their guns than anybody else does anywhere else.
Yeah, I think it's probably the difference between having like a mental assent or a concept of a species versus having intimate personal knowledge of the animals. So hunters have both of that. Mm-hmm. I think people who are just generally wildlife enthusiasts, maybe consider themselves environmentalists, would be anti-hunting. They understand, okay, there are these white-tailed deer run around in the woods, and they do certain things at certain times of the year. I have pictures of these deer. I have seen them at close range. I've watched the hair on their throats ripple as they swallow acorns. I've heard what it sounds like when they eat. I know their pattern. So I not only have knowledge of kind of the species in general, but I know deer individually. Mm. And I just think you have such a different level of respect and appreciation for an animal, and you can make decisions on, okay, I need to harvest this buck because in a couple of years, he's going to be past his prime and he probably needs to be taken out. He's not going to get any more mature than he is right now. That's kind of the difference. And quite frankly, it's a little bit too nuanced of a point, I think, to make in a headline to where people would understand. Like, the people that are killing these animals are also the people that love them and care for them the most.
Maybe if you had your rifle, you'd actually be able to help too.
if I could just get close enough, I can make something happen. But you know, I've got some good bucks on camera, and this weekend there's going to be a deer in
there.
Danger.
You go. That's tell you for right sure.
Oh, that's the shooting you do.
Yeah,
camera shooting. Nice.
There you go.
Trail cameras, boys.
That is Tim Shelswick from Drury Outdoors. We're talking hunting, and we are going to keep that conversation going. Got to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere. You're listening to Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors.
Get that dirty point buck.
I'm contributing to the show.
Get that dirty point buck.
You've never heard that?
I haven't.
Chad's about ready to fall over.
It's fine.
It's called polka, man.
It's fine. You know?
Hey, that's
music.
Something.
It's my thing.
People know that song.
The hunters know that song.
Tim, do you know that song?
Yeah, our buddy Tim Shelswick from Drury Outdoors is joining us back here on Second Amendment Radio and The Great Outdoors. And Tim, you know that song, right?
I'm very – in fact, I had – a Youper's cassette when I was a kid, and it didn't have 30 point buck on it, but it had, like, looking back, it had some kind of racy music on it that I probably shouldn't have been listening to.
Probably not.
11 or 12 year old. But
doesn't that song encompass the deer camp? I mean, seriously, and the passion, and you get excited.
100%. Yeah. And everyone, like, deer hunting is kind of a great equalizer of people because, you know, in DeerCast, people can upload their kills and share them with other people. And we always get pictures of this, you know, my eight-year-old daughter went out for her first deer hunt, and she took this 160-inch whitetail down in the lower part of Missouri or up in Iowa. And these, I mean, kids and women that go out for their first time hunting, it's just, you just never know what's going to walk out. And it doesn't matter who you are, what kind of gear you have. You just never know when the giant is going to show up. And that's what motivates most of us to go out, is it's kind of the thrill of the hunt and not knowing what the potential really is.
So, Tim, we're sort of now in full swing of rifle season here in Missouri. We're about a week into rifle season. People listening might be getting excited and, motivated to get out there and maybe take their kids for the first time, or maybe get out there for the first time in years and years. Is there any just basic advice that you give somebody that maybe hasn't been out in the woods for a very, very long time, or bringing their kids for the first time to kind of acclimate themselves back into the hunting lifestyle?
Yeah, you know, safety is obviously the most important thing. So make sure you're wearing your blaze orange, and make sure you know where your shots are going. Make sure that you're identifying your targets before you shoot, because this also happens to be the time of year where you get the most inexperienced and most unpracticed people in the field, because, like you just mentioned, Tony, people are kind of brushing off or maybe have never been out before. So you want to make sure that that all your bases are covered, that when you're crossing a fence line or anything like that, that your gun is unloaded, and that your gun's always pointed to the sky. Just those things that, and in fact, it's there's an interesting duality here. It's typically not the newcomers that get themselves into trouble safety-wise. And just in general, deer hunting is a very safe pastime. There are very few injuries relative to other sports and other pastimes. But it's the guys who do it all the time and get a little too complacent, and they cut corners. Those are the ones that guys like me, that are in it, you know, all the time. We have to be the most careful about not taking shortcuts with safety.
Yeah, overconfidence can be a bad thing. Go ahead, Bo.
And exactly.
Just like any sport, though, if I haven't bowled in a long time, I can't just walk into a bowling alley and bowl, you know, 250. This comes around once a year to go deer hunting. Now, I'm going to guess, Tim, that you're one of those people that goes out and pre-hunts, where you're in the deer stand a few weeks beforehand, just kind of laying out the land. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, I'll run cameras, and I'll go out and sit in the truck and watch and observe. And I mean, I pretty much have a good idea what deer are around my properties and where they're going. And that's a lot of guys. I mean, for a lot of guys, deer hunting is a year-round activity, because if you're not actually actively hunting them, you're scouting, you're running cameras, you're putting in food plots, you're doing all those kind of right. things to make your property accessible and attractive to deer.
Okay, so if, some deer friends of mine, Chuck and Chucky from Eureka, they went hunting and they drive, you know, 3 or 4 hours north, and they go up, and I'm texting. Of course, this technology, you can communicate with your hunter in the woods, but I text them, and I'm like, why did you drive 3.5 hours to go deer hunting when there are 15 deer on Highway W in Jefferson County? We need these cleaned up. If you hit a deer with a vehicle, what is somebody supposed to do?
Well, if you want to possess the deer, you have to get you have to contact your local conservation agent and get a salvage tag to recover it. Mm-hmm. It's not legal, and you hear about people doing this all the time. They see a buck on the side of the road and they stop and they break out their hacksaw and hack off the antlers. You can't legally possess those antlers without some kind of a salvage tag from the Missouri Department of Conservation.
Tim, can you do that and then get the tag? Because you know that these aren't going to be here long, and I want to get this before, you know, they get damaged or something. Or is that still not, is that not the proper way to do it?
Yeah, you need to make the call right then and there, and the agent may exercise some discretion and say, go ahead, I'll get the paperwork going and issue you this salvage tag. Same thing if we call them deadheads. If you find a deer in the woods and it's got its antlers still attached, we call them deadheads, but that's something that you would call in and get a salvage tag for. And just making that contact with a conservation agent is what you need to do first. And technically, I guess you're supposed to have the tag, but if you verbally tell them, they give you permission, you're probably covered.
Right, yeah.
I've got a friend that says, hey, if you ever hit a deer, because, I mean, you see them all the time, and it's late at night, number one question is the conservation department answering the call 24 hours a day. Number two, can I just call my deer hunting buddy and say, hey, come get this, I just got it. I mean, and I'm not intending, but I just hit this deer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you can possess that deer with a... And as far as I know, I could be wrong, but my understanding is that you can possess if someone has a deer hunting permit and they want to slap a tag on that doe that you hit, if the meat is good and everything, then they can do that. It would just be like they were taking it via a hunting method. But you just the idea is you just can't take a deer without notifying the Department of Conservation. They keep track of all of that. And because essentially all the fish, forests, and wildlife, or the fish and the wildlife in the state, unless they've been stocked privately, belong to the citizens. And so they are kind of the governing body for ensuring there's record keeping and there's management of these animals. So you can't just have people taking deer without permits and without logging them.
So how long does it actually take for the salvage tag to be obtained?
I've done it a few times. I want to say probably about a week or so. It kind of depends on how busy the agent is,
but that's,
I think,
why it's important to get that verbal permission, because obviously it's not going to sit there for a week. You know what I mean? And if you want to do it the right way, I could hear people saying, like, well, if I do it the right way, I'm not going to get the antlers, or I'm going to, you know,
I'm going to go behind me.
There's going to be somebody else who's not doing it the right way, and they're going to take advantage of it. But as long as you get that verbal permission, that goes a long way. I mean, it might not technically be legal, but it's going to give you a lot of clearance to do what you want to do.
Yeah, and every conservation agent I have ever met has been an upstanding individual. They understand the realities, and they understand kind of what you're up against, and they've been extremely reasonable and accommodating to work with.
Mm-hmm. Talking about hunting with our buddy Tim Shelsbeck from Drury Outdoors, I want to remind folks that this hunting segment is brought to you by our friends at Razorback Armory on Manchester. It's a full-service firearm shop that strives to be the area's premier destination for firearm enthusiasts. Check out their website, razorbackarmory.com. Tim, you mentioned earlier that you mentioned bear earlier, and I said I had a story here. We're almost out of time. I want to go through this as quickly as we can. There was a story in the news this week that the Missouri Department of Conservation is trying to purchase a new helicopter that they want to use to track the state's growing bear population and help cull the state's feral hog population. Real quick, what kind of numbers are we looking at? And are bear becoming a real issue in the state? We all know feral hogs are, but bear is not something you think of in Missouri usually.
Yeah, I've got friends that have property down in southern Missouri. They own an outfitting business called Devil's Backbone Outfitters. They've got black bear on camera. There are black bear out in Eureka, in the Wildwood area. So they are definitely encroaching. I think what the Department of Conservation wants to do is ensure that they never really become an issue. And obviously people have to take preventative measures to ensure that they're not providing kind of an attractive nuisance for bear, but that there's a large enough a huntable population that's sustainable, that's healthy. Bears are predators, and so they can help keep deer and other populations in check. Yeah. I think the goal is to have a healthy, sustaining population. And I'm not sure where we are right now in terms of just a flat-out number, but we must be getting close to that healthy population point because, like you mentioned, the Department of Conservation is talking about instituting a bear season very soon.
The two best things a hunter can do, in my opinion, to help themselves this hunting season is to download the DeerCast app from Drury Outdoors and listen to the 100% Wild podcast that our friend Tim Shelsvik is the co-host of. Tim, how can people get the app and hear your show?
Yep, the app is free to download. You can go to DeerCast.com or the Apple Store or the Google Play Store, download it. There is a $9.99 a year version and a $19.99 a year version. So you pick what you want. You get more tools with a higher level. And then the Drury Outdoors 100% Wild podcast is gettable anywhere you get podcasts. This last episode, Matt Drury and I talk about how to balance family life during the rut, because we all want to be out in a tree stand, but you got to be careful not to burn bridges back home. So we talk about how to do both.
You have family to tend to, as you mentioned, tending.
That is correct.
100%. Yeah, you got to keep the home fires burning while you keep your deer campfires burning. There can't let help. Either go out.
Yes, good nice stuff. Tim Shelsvik from Drury Outdoors and thethinkingwoodsman.com. You can check them out in both places. Great talking to you, my friend. We'll talk to you again real soon.
All right, see you, boys.
Have a good Thanksgiving.
You bet. And just a reminder, thanks for reminding me of that, Bo. We will be here next weekend, Thanksgiving week, and we will have a new show for you. So make sure you are listening to us next week and every week to Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. For my partner, Bo Matthews, and our producer, Chad Ellis, I'm Tony Colombo. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Get more at 971talk.com.
You've never heard that?
I haven't.
Chad's about ready to fall over.
It's fine.
It's called polka, man.
It's fine. You know?
Hey, that's
music.
Something.
It's my thing.
People know that song.
The hunters know that song.
Tim, do you know that song?
Yeah, our buddy Tim Shelsvik from Drury Outdoors is joining us back here on Second Amendment Radio and The Great Outdoors. And Tim, you know that song, right?
I'm very... In fact, I had a Youper's cassette when I was a kid, and it didn't have 30 Point Buck on it, but it had, like, looking back, it had some kind of racy music on it that I probably shouldn't have been listening
to as an
11 or 12 year old. But
doesn't that song encompass the deer camp? I mean, seriously, and the passion, and you get excited.
100%. Yeah. And everyone, like, deer hunting is kind of a great equalizer of people because, you know, in DeerCast, people can upload their kills and share them with other people. And we always get pictures of this, you know, my eight-year-old daughter went out for her first deer hunt, and she took this 160-inch whitetail down in the lower part of Missouri or up in Iowa. And kids and women that go out for their first time hunting, it's just, you just never know what's going to walk out. And it doesn't matter who you are, what kind of gear you have. You just never know when the giant is going to show up. And that's what motivates most of us to go out, is it's kind of the thrill of the hunt and not knowing what the potential really is.
So, Tim, we're sort of now in full swing of rifle season here in Missouri. We're about a week into rifle season. People listening might be getting excited and motivated to get out there and maybe take their kids for the first time, or maybe get out there for the first time in years and years. Is there any just basic advice that you give somebody that maybe hasn't been out in the woods for a very, very long time, or bringing their kids for the first time to kind of acclimate themselves back into the hunting lifestyle?
Yeah, you know, safety is obviously the most important thing. So make sure you're wearing your Blaze Orange, and make sure you know where your shots are going. Make sure that you're identifying your targets before you shoot, because this also happens to be the time of year where you get the most inexperienced and most unpracticed people in the field, because like you just mentioned, Tony, people are kind of brushing off or maybe have never been out before. So you want to make sure that you that all your bases are covered, that when you're crossing a fence line or anything like that, that your gun is unloaded, that your gun's always pointed to the sky. Just those things that, and in fact, it's there's an interesting duality here. It's typically not the newcomers that get themselves into trouble safety-wise. And just in general, deer hunting is a very safe pastime. There are very few injuries relative to other sports and other pastimes. But it's the guys who do it all the time and get a little too complacent, and they cut corners. Those are the ones that guys like me, that are in it, you know, all the time. We have to be the most careful about not taking shortcuts with safety.
Yeah, overconfidence can be a bad thing. Go ahead, Bo.
And exactly.
Just like any sport, though, if I haven't bowled in a long time, I can't just walk into a bowling alley and bowl, you know, 250. This comes around once a year to go deer hunting. Now, I'm going to guess, Tim, that you're one of those people that goes out and pre-hunts, where you're in the deer stand a few weeks beforehand, just kind of laying out the land. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, I'll run cameras, and I'll go out and sit in the truck and watch and observe. And I mean, I pretty much have a good idea what deer are around my properties and where they're going. And that's a lot of guys. I mean, for a lot of guys, deer hunting is a year-round activity, because if you're not actually actively hunting them, you're scouting, you're running cameras, you're putting in food plots, you're doing all those kind of things to make your property accessible and attractive to deer.
Okay, so some dear friends of mine, Chuck and Chucky from Eureka, they went hunting, and they drive, you know, 3 or 4 hours north, and they go up, and I'm texting. Of course, this technology can communicate with your hunter in the woods, but I text them, and I'm like, why did you drive 3.5 hours to go deer hunting when there are 15 deer on Highway W in Jefferson County? We need these cleaned up. If you hit a deer with a vehicle, what is somebody supposed to do?
Well, if you want to possess the deer, you have to get you have to contact your local conservation agent and get a salvage tag to recover it. Mm-hmm. It's not legal, and you hear about people doing this all the time. They see a buck on the side of the road, and they stop and they break out their hacksaw and hack off the antlers. You can't legally possess those antlers without some kind of a salvage tag from the Missouri Department of Conservation.
Tim, can you do that and then get the tag? Because you know that these aren't going to be here long, and I want to get this before, you know, they get damaged or something. Or is that not the proper way to do it?
Yeah, you need to make the call right then and there, and the agent may exercise some discretion and say, go ahead, I'll get the paperwork going and issue you this salvage tag. Same thing we call them deadheads. If you find a deer in the woods and it's got its antlers still attached, we call them deadheads, but that's something that you would call in and get a salvage tag for. And just making that contact with a conservation agent is what you need to do first. And technically, I guess you're supposed to have the tag, but if you verbally tell them, they give you permission, you're probably covered.
Right, yeah.
I've got a friend that says, hey, if you ever hit a deer, because, I mean, you see them all the time, and it's late at night, number one question is the conservation department answering the call 24 hours a day. Number two, can I just call my deer hunting buddy and say, hey, come get this, I just got it. I mean, and I'm not intending, but I just hit this deer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you can possess that deer with a... And as far as I know, I could be wrong, but my understanding is that you can possess if someone has a deer hunting permit and they want to slap a tag on that doe that you hit, if the meat is good and everything, then they can do that. It would just be like they were taking it via a hunting method. But you just the idea is you just can't take a deer without notifying the Department of Conservation. They keep track of all of that. And because essentially all the fish, forests, and wildlife, or the fish and the wildlife in the state, unless they've been stocked privately, belong to the citizens. And so they are kind of the governing body for ensuring there's record keeping and there's management of these animals. So you can't just have people taking deer without permits and without logging them.
So how long does it actually take for the salvage tag to be obtained?
I've done it a few times. I want to say probably about a week or so. It kind of depends on how busy the agent is, I think.
That's why it's important to get that verbal permission. Because obviously it's not going to sit there for a week. You know what I mean? And if you want to do it the right way, I could hear people saying like, well, if I do it the right way, I'm not going to get the antlers, or there's going to be somebody else who's not doing it the right way, and they're going to take advantage of it. But as long as you get that verbal permission, that goes a long way. I mean, it might not technically be legal, but it's going to give you a lot of clearance to do what you want to do.
Yeah, and every conservation agent I have ever met has been an upstanding individual. They understand the realities, and they understand kind of what you're up against, and they've been extremely reasonable and accommodating to work with.
Mm-hmm. Talking about hunting with our buddy Tim Shelsbeck from Drury Outdoors, want to remind folks that this hunting segment is brought to you by our friends at Razorback Armory on Manchester. It's a full-service firearm shop that strives to be the area's premier destination for firearm enthusiasts. Check out their website, razorbackarmory.com. Tim, you mentioned earlier that you mentioned bear earlier, and I said I had a story here. We're almost out of time. I want to go through this as quickly as we can. There's a story in the news this week that the Missouri Department of Conservation is trying to purchase a new helicopter that they want to use to track the state's growing bear population and help cull the state's feral hog population. Real quick, what kind of numbers are we looking at? Are bear becoming a real issue in the state? We all know feral hogs are, but bear is not something you think of in Missouri usually.
Yeah, I've got friends that have property down in southern Missouri. They own an outfitting business called Devil's Backbone Outfitters. They've got black bear on camera. There are black bear out in Eureka, in the Wildwood area. So they are definitely encroaching. I think what the Department of Conservation wants to do is ensure that they never really become an issue. And obviously people have to take preventative measures to ensure that they're not providing kind of an attractive nuisance for bear, but that there's a large enough a huntable population that's sustainable, that's healthy. Bears are predators, and so they can help keep deer and other populations in check. Yeah. I think the goal is to have a healthy, sustaining population. And I'm not sure where we are right now in terms of just a flat-out number, but we must be getting close to that healthy population point because, like you mentioned, the Department of Conservation is talking about instituting a bear season very soon.
The two best things a hunter can do, in my opinion, to help themselves this hunting season is to download the DeerCast app from Drury Outdoors and listen to the 100% Wild podcast that our friend Tim Shelsvik is the co-host of. Tim, how can people get the app and hear your show?
Yep, the app is free to download. You can go to DeerCast.com or the Apple Store or the Google Play Store, download it. There is a $9.99 a year version and a $19.99 a year version. So you pick what you want. You get more tools with a higher level. And then the Drury Outdoors 100% Wild podcast is gettable anywhere you get podcasts. This last episode, Matt Drury and I talk about how to balance family life during the rut, because we all want to be out in a tree stand, but you got to be careful not to burn bridges back home. So we talk about how to do both.
You have family to tend to, as you mentioned, tending.
That is correct.
100%. Yeah, you got to keep the home fires burning while you keep your deer campfires burning. Can't let either go out.
Yes, good nice stuff. Tim Shelsvik from Drury Outdoors and thethinkingwoodsman.com. You can check them out in both places. Great talking to you, my friend. We'll talk to you again real soon.
All right, see you, boys.
Have a good Thanksgiving.
You bet. And just a reminder, thanks for reminding me of that, Bo. We will be here next weekend, Thanksgiving week, and we will have a new show for you. So make sure you are listening to us next week and every week to Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. For my partner, Bo Matthews, and our producer, Chad Ellis, I'm Tony Colombo. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Get more at 971talk.com.